Welcome to South Bend Supporters, a St. Louis City SC podcast powered by Ready to Live Wellness. David Heck alongside Eric Cole. Eric, we're at it again after an audio snafu last night derailed us. So we're going to record the episode one more time, which is why it's coming out a day late this time.
Yeah, I think our mics wanted to play a little April Fool's joke on us, and we didn't really find it that funny.
Eric, yeah, it's a good point. Was it the first?
It was the first.
Oh my God. Yeah. How about that?
If April 1st would have been today and you'd have texted me that morning, I'd have just been like, dude, you're over 30. Stop with these April Fool jokes.
Well, it's safe to say, Eric, soccer fans we are, audio engineers we are not. The issue was that the microphones were not picking up, and so we were recording this through the MacBook, and the MacBook mic that's on the actual machine that was picking everything up. So when we listen, I sit with the MacBook closest to me. Eric, mm-hmm. We sit across about a 6-foot-long table. Mm-hmm. And so your audio was like almost non-existent. Mine was there, but it wasn't quite the same. And because those mics on the computers are not dynamic, I think I'm saying that correctly, mm-hmm. It was picking up every little, like, you know, ancillary sound in the room anytime we would move or, you know, clear throats or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And it just sounded terrible. So we felt like we owed it to the fans to put out a product that people enjoy and can get behind. So that's why we are committed to redoing this show and airing it on Wednesday, April 3rd.
Yes, and hopefully the people that are listening now are like, maybe we would have liked it better without Eric's audio on there. Maybe you guys had it right that way.
You're the star of the show, brother. Nobody wants to hear me try and get through an hour talking about City when, you know, I'm like, this guy scored and this guy blocked it and whatever. We'll move forward. An exciting day of sports on Saturday turned into a very rough one. I was excited, Eric. I had a 3-TV setup going on Saturday. Locked in, man. We had the Blues playing Illinois. You had the St. Louis Battlehawks kicking off their season.
That's right.
The Cardinals played at nighttime. There were fights on TV. Iowa women's basketball was going. And then, yeah, of course, nightcap there with City. Unfortunately, it ended really poorly because most of those teams I just rattled off lost, including the one that we cover.
Yeah. And from what I think I've seen in the past, I think days that we've had where, like, at least three St. Louis sports teams or local sports teams play on the same day, I don't think our record's so hot. So I'm hoping all the organizations get together and reconfigure their schedules if this happens in the future.
I hate to break this to you.
Oh, no, you looked this up?
No, I'm not. I'm not looking this up. I just know because the Battlehawks and City both play at home on Saturday night.
Oh, do they?
They do. I think the Blues might play that night too, and I'm sure the Cardinals play during the day. They'll also be at home. So good news for downtown businesses. It should be a huge day for them. I mean, that's going to be thousands of people.
Oh, yeah.
That'll be downtown for between, you know, downtown West where the Enterprise Center and City Park is at, and then, of course, the north part there where the stadium's at, and then you've got the, you know, Busch. I'm sorry, the Dome is, and then Busch right downtown in the middle of all of it. So it should be nice. I mean, Ballpark Village will probably pop in, and then a lot of the local bars and restaurants around town should really benefit from it. Hopefully there's some W's to talk about, though.
Man, there is something exciting, though, about, you know, having multiple teams in the area playing on the same day, especially when you go to like City Park or anything else, and people are talking about the other games or they're checking up on the scores. There's something about just that. The way downtown just kind of pops on those days, it's super cool to see.
It'll be great. Looking forward to it, man. It should be a lot of fun this Saturday. Again, hopefully we're talking about wins instead of losses because Saturday night in Salt Lake, it was a disappointing 3-1 defeat as Real Salt Lake takes down City in one that you can only describe as one that got away.
Yeah. Yeah, it just, not that the performance was great on the whole night in general, but I mean, to carry a lead so far into the game and, you know, let it go, the quote unquote, let it go the way it did, just was frustrating. And especially the way, you know, we keep saying it feels like week in and week out, like this is a gotta get a point, gotta get a result, and to go down that way and, you know, kind of the performance, you know, especially it was such a bummer the way we came out. But then I felt like the way we drifted from that opening moment, it was such a hot start. We'll get into it. You know, Well, we'll get into starting lineups and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, City drops to 10th in the West. This, Eric, if my memory serves me correctly, the first time this team has been outside of a playoff spot, albeit not terribly far out, but regardless.
No, you're right.
I mean, they started red hot last year. They never dropped. They were in first almost the entire season.
What's the lowest they got to last season?
Man, fourth or fifth, question. Maybe.
Yeah, it wasn't very far.
And it was only for like a week or two.
Yeah.
I mean, they were in first for like the majority of the season.
Yeah, kind of like you touched on last week is, you know, I think it was early on to where, you know, a win here could propel you multiple spots up the table. And so, yeah, I think we didn't get very far. So it is weird, like looking on ESPN and looking at the table and seeing in the conference and actually having to scroll.
Yeah, and it still can happen very quickly. I mean, you talk about 3 points for a win. You go and play at home against a struggling Dallas team this week and you grab 3 points, you're right back in the thick of it. And I mean, when you think about it, Salt Lake now improves. They're in third place in the West. They have 3 wins, 2 defeats, 1 draw, sitting with 10 points. So when you think about those guys sitting in third, you know, only really 3 points essentially off of where City's at in 10th. So it's not too far-fetched. You win a game or two here and you're right back in the mix.
Weren't we on the same points or close?
Seven. Both of them had seven.
Yeah, yeah. So it's wild to think that a game result, one goes to 10th, one goes to third. I mean, early on in the season, that's where it, you know, it's kind of a wild shoot until the season kind of really gets into flow.
The issue's been the draws. Last year, they didn't have enough of them. This year, too many of them, 4 already on the season. And when you're coupling that with not getting W's, I mean, 1 point here and there is just not going to cut it.
Yeah, you think about it, you know, we go 3 games with 3 draws and a team that goes 2 losses and a win, we're even on points, and that's crazy.
Exactly. City comes out in a 4-2-3-1 on Saturday night in Salt Lake. Berkey, of course, the mainstay there in goal. You had Markanic, Parker, Yarrow, and Totland, Blom, and Durkin in the middle. Interesting to see those two on the field for the same time.
For the first time,
Together, you had Celio, Jackson, and Vasilev there up top in the middle, and then you had Klaus running that lone striker spot.
Yeah, that's kind of what we anticipated going back to. It just doesn't seem like that 4-4-2 formation is really going to work for us. As much as we kind of would love to see it work, it just seems like at this moment with the personnel we have and the way our style of play is going, that 4-2-3-1 kind of just fits our system. So we kind of anticipated that. We anticipated, you know, Klaus going back up top, you know, just hopefully running with that, you know, getting on the board as far as that goal he got the week prior. And so there weren't really, I think, any surprises as far as the starting lineup goes. Again, kind of like we touched on with the personnel we have, it was great seeing Parker come back into the starting lineup. And I thought him and Yarrow all night really played really well. I mean, we heard their names a lot, which I don't know is necessarily a good thing when you're talking about the defense, but it was, you know, pretty much in a positive manner and kind of saved us from what could have been a much worse night. I thought they played great. It was, you know, seeing Markanic come back into that starting lineup, it's good knowing that we do have competition there, and it's not just you know, I think last year one thing that kind of really shone with our need for outside backs was the lack of competition and the lack of availability that we have there. So it's good that there is competition there. So that, you know, Markanic coming back in wasn't as big of a surprise, I guess you could say. Blom and Durkin, kind of what we have available. But I think as far as, you know, the three attacking mids, we'll say, it seemed like just with the that was no surprises, really.
Yeah, I would love to see, in a perfect world, I'd love to see how a 4-4-2 could work with Klaus and Adeniran playing together. I just don't think with the personnel that you have, it makes a lot of sense. First of all, to your point, they don't seem to link up that well together anyway. The other piece to that is that you need to have some firepower coming off the bench. And I don't think I realized going into the season how much Nico would be missed, but he's been missed. I mean, when you can rotate 3 strikers up top and be able to play at a 4, they played 4-4-2 a lot last year. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to do that and have somebody coming off the bench would be great. But, you know, you look at the options that are there. I mean, Nokvi Thoresen doesn't seem like the answer at this point. And then you've got a bunch of like midfielders, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't love the idea of the solo striker necessarily, but in this situation with the personnel they have, I just think it makes the most sense. And being able to bring Sam in off the bench, or times where Sam starts and being able to bring Klaus in off the bench, I mean, that's a huge boost. I get asked all the time where the best place is to watch City games, and the answer is always the same. It's Felix's Pizza Pub, and it's not even close. Not only can you watch every single home and away City game surrounded by fans, but you can do it while enjoying the best pizza in the area. Now, I like the Murphy Pie, which is chicken, wing sauce, green onions, blue cheese, and jalapeno ranch. But maybe that's not your thing. Maybe you're more of a fan of a traditional pizza. Then check out the Dogtown with Italian sausage, pepperoni, and pepper bacon. Or maybe you're like my partner Eric over here and you like a little bit of both. It doesn't matter what your tastes are because you can order any of the pizzas at Felix's by the slice. But it is no ordinary slice. Felix's offers the largest slice you are going to find anywhere in St. Louis. So mix and match. Try different pizzas. Just make sure to save room for their award-winning double trashed wings in buffalo, jalapeno ranch, or Thai chili. And if you're looking for something to do during the week, head to Felix's every Tuesday night for Stoned Trivia to test your knowledge in the most fun bar trivia around. Even if you're not a trivia buff, you can still win great prizes, so show up at 7 and be ready to have some fun. It's Felix's Pizza Pub, located at 6401 Clayton Avenue in Dogtown, and check them out online at Felix's Dogtown.
Yeah, and they just haven't seemed to click either as being on the same field. I have an idea that we'll get into later when we talk about Dallas a little bit more, that it's a while, you know, it's a far-fetched idea, but I think it maybe just kind of with what we're also seeing going on with our offensive or lack of offensive productivity, that maybe they could work together. But you look at the games when they are on the field at the same time, they just don't really seem to find each other. They just don't really seem to link up as much. And getting them the ball seems to be the issue to even have them a chance to link up. So, I think at this moment, again, with what we're dealing with, and it's a good point, too. You know, when Nico left, I was like, well, you know, I think we'll be all right. Sam coming into form, showing especially towards the end of the season that he can, you know, carry that second striker role. And then, you know, Klaus, the way he, you know, both started and kind of ended the season, we were like feeling, you know, good there. And then, you know, Nokvi, it was kind of, we'll give him this season to, you know, see what this promise is all about. And I think we're kind of realizing more just as far as depth or an option, or to the, your point, you know, that availability, if they do play, if one's not working, bringing in a striker off the bench, it seems like, you know, Nico's kind of getting missed more and more. And it's also kind of frustrating. You know, we're very happy that he left and got to, you know, go back to Italy, and he's in a great position to play in the top league over there. But it's also frustrating when I check on Twitter all the time and I see, oh, Nico came in, and it's like he's also struggling to get minutes over there. So It's even more of a kind of like, damn, he left and he's not even getting to play as much. And he kind of got the raw end of the deal where once they signed him, I think they signed like two other strikers. He's got to be like, whoa, you signed, you know, me. And so it seems to be with the lack of offensive productivity, you know, that miss growing more and more each week.
Yeah, Eric, you were right on about the hot start, and it was a very hot start for City. Right away in the third minute, coming out with a huge goal. I was texting with our friend of the show, buddy of ours, Dave Wyckoff, former co-host of the great podcast circa 2009, Sports by the Pound. Go back and check that out on blogtalkradio.com before...
You thought our mics sounded bad.
Oh, my God. We were doing it on cell phones, quite literally, Eric. It was terrible, but there's some good content out there. Oh, we had big interviews, too.
Yeah,
I can't believe people took it seriously because of how terrible it sounded. But he throws out the term golazo, and I don't know that term real well.
You never heard it?
Maybe I have, but I've been saying it a lot ever since. It kind of rolls off the tongue, and it's fun. But this goal that Indy had to get that lead to 1-0 for City was certainly a golazo.
Yeah, and man, this is what we were hoping for, is, you know, to come out blazing and get on the board early and, you know, really take it to the team. Because, you know, I think I saw a stat, and I want to give like credit to Matt Baker. He's one of the hosts of Flyover Footy, which is another stellar podcast.
Smart dude.
Oh man, that dude makes me feel so stupid when it comes to like soccer statistics and everything.
I don't think he wants to. That's not his goal, I don't think.
No, it's not. But he is just—he's very good at it. And I think he put out something that like City and RSL are the top two teams, or close to the top two teams, as far as turnover production. So we knew like getting on them early was important because of their style as well as our style. And you see it, and it's a great goal, like you said. Indy picks up the ball out on the wing at kind of a weird angle, double step over, brings it onto his favored left foot, and, you know, finesses this into the side netting, pretty much the only spot that I think he really has. And it was just such a great goal. And I was so excited because so early, we jump on top. But then the issue I had, and maybe this is just me overanalyzing it, but it felt like after that, we really let off the gas. And when I say that is, I understand, you know, when you get a lead, you try and eat up as much time. But it felt like even on set pieces, corner kicks, any sort of play, there was just no urgency to go for it. And an issue that we've had all year is maintaining a lead. And thinking that you jump on a team that early, I would be wanting to, and you're struggling, go for more and get on top and really kind of get back into a rhythm and show yourself. And it just felt like from that moment on, there wasn't as much. I don't know if it was we were comfortable with having that 1-0 lead being away. I don't know if it was we were, you know, that was the game plan going in as far as if we get a lead, you know, settle things in and kind of, you know, do what DC did to us the week before. But I felt like from there on out, there just wasn't really any urgency or offensive productivity. I think I saw a stat as well that I think we had 2 shots on goal the whole night, yep, and one of those was the goal. I feel like if you're a team struggling for offense and you get on top of a team early, use that momentum and ride it for the rest of the game.
Now, that said, they had 11 total shots. They just weren't finding the net. They weren't finding the target. Salt Lake, on the opposite side, also had, I think, 11 total shots as well. Salt Lake just found it more, you know? And so it is frustrating. I agree. Like, I don't like that that strategy or that style of play. I don't know if it's something that, you know, inherently they just do, or if that's something that Carnell puts in place, you know, once they're up and on the road. We know how hard it is to win on the road in the MLS. All you got to do is turn it on MLS 360. They'll talk about it the entire time leading up before a game. And throughout the other games that are going on. But
or like you said, betting purposes.
Betting
shows
purposes.
That.
I mean, it's so hard to win on the road. It really, really is. But when you go up by one, you know, you bring up a really good point, and I agree. City has played so much better down by a goal this year. I mean, how many times did they come back to tie it or take a lead after being down, tying it primarily because there's been so many draws? But regardless, when they are down, they tend to have that urgency. So for me, like, you remember last year when all these goals were getting scored.
Exactly.
You know, they were up 1-0 and then 2-0, and then maybe they let one in and it's 2-1. But then before you know it, it's 4-1.
Yeah.
And they've just become dominant. And that's the difference in this team than last year's team right now, I think, is that there isn't the same level of intensity whenever they get up by a goal to go for the kill.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I just felt like last year it was, if we would have scored in the 3rd minute, you're thinking, "Ooh boy, what's the odds on the over?
How many are we going to get now?"
Yeah, you had that feeling. And so, and maybe this is just me overanalyzing it now that I know the result, but it just felt to me like I was kind of almost yelling at the TV a couple times, like, why are we, you know, playing this game so early on? 3 minutes in, that's a lot of football left. And to kind of almost feel like it settled back in, not that the, you know, I don't feel like either team was necessarily dominant in the first half, but we were definitely playing better in the first half. And then, you know, from there, but even from there on out, it just didn't feel like there was much in that first half that I had that feeling of, oh, we're going to go get a bunch more.
No, there's not a lot to report on after that. There's not much to even talk about. I mean, it was pretty stagnant the rest of the way. There were some chances, just not a lot of shots. I mean, and honestly, like, one of the things I want to talk about is the breakdown in the midfield, because while I like the idea of playing Blom and Durkin together like that, you give up a lot of offense when you put two super defensive minded players on the field at the same time. And with that, you know, and I'm not sure, does Durkin have a tendency to play up a little bit? Because it seemed like they were getting past that line a lot and then into that second wave. And you can even look at like Anderson Julio, who had put one in the back of the net in the 12th minute. Now that's really scary. Of course, it was ruled offsides. Salt Lake had 4 offside penalties, or not penalties, but offside violations or infractions or whatever you want to call it during the game. And it just seemed like the pressure was mounting on the defense. So maybe that goes back to the original point that City just wasn't playing forward, and then they were getting kind of caught, you know, back.
And it's kind of been an issue throughout the year, it feels like, where we get a goal, but then shortly after we concede again. And, you know, maybe it is that lack of killer instinct. And you definitely noticed kind of the bigger gap with being two defensive-minded central midfielders. I think they showed a stat, I believe it was like at halftime or something like that, with like flow of the game. And you look at majority of our offense, or all of our offensive production was coming down the wings. And I know we look for that more often, but the stat was like 2% or something crazy low. And it's just been an issue all year where we're so far that we're struggling to find either AZ, or if AZ does get it, it's a missed pass here or there, and he's still trying to get into form. And then we're not finding that striker. So that striker has to come so far back that when we do pick up the ball, it's like we're still way deep in our end. And when you have a team like RSL who is praised upon turnovers and everything, like, you're just kind of inviting this pressure. So maybe it just felt that way. But like you said, not long after, to concede a goal, even though it was called back, you're thinking, guys, we shouldn't be letting this team back in it. We should be, you know, killing them off now.
Yeah. I mean, even on an offsides, you know, like that, the fact that they were able to get the ball in the position they were able to get the ball in, that really needs to not be the case, yeah. Right? You're 100% right. Again, not a lot else going on. Berkey had a save late. There was a corner from Aziel Jackson. City was able to maintain possession after it wasn't cleared away. Markanic found himself wide open, and kind of a poor attempt, I guess, at a cross ended up being played back to McMath. But
yeah, on that cross, man, of all people that I would put on the list that I hope is found wide open in the box on a cross and a header, unfortunately, Markanic's a little bit lower down on that list.
Where is Tim Parker?
Oh, man.
He's on the field. Yeah. You need a goal, Timmy.
Let the red hair fly, man. That's who you want to see coming in. And then, you look at that as like, you know, you hope there's something better off of that with such a big chance, and there just really wasn't. And so it's kind of been the theme going on so far this year is, you know, you see these chances and it's squandered or wasted that are good chances that you look back on throughout the game and think, man, what could have happened from there? And it just continues to be a frustration as far as, and the other thing that I was kind of noticing, and this is easy Monday, Tuesday, whatever day it is now, quarterbacking. Yeah. But it felt like, and I know this is so much more difficult also when you're on the field, but it felt like throughout the night, there were a lot of instances where we'd have an attacking situation and we would make a pass, but you would look and see like two other options that would have been a better opportunity in that situation. And I know, again, it's just easier to, you know, say that now or watching it from the TV, but I just felt like maybe a team playing with a little bit more confidence in the attacking third is looking for those other options rather than just option A. And it just seems like we go to that. There were just a couple chances where, you know, maybe there's a shot or a pass and you're thinking, oh man, if you would have went to him instead of him, there's a much better opportunity there.
Eric, that's a hell of a segue, and that's why you're one of the best in the business, brother. We go into half 1-0, and that 60th minute run by Klaus is the one that I want to address.
Yeah.
Because it brings up a point that you just made. This thing was a throw-in by Real Salt Lake deep in city territory. If you were thinking about a football field, this would have been like from the 25-yard line, the opposing 25-yard line. Klaus took off, and I didn't even realize that he had this kind of breakaway speed, but he beat Vera down the sideline and then ended up getting a couple of steps on him and had so much space in front of him. He had a defender close in on him and then went ahead and had a go at it and ends up hitting it high. This is a shot that I'm sure that Klaus probably lost some sleep over that night and would probably like back. And I think 2023 Klaus probably buries this. The angle wasn't great. You mentioned there was somebody on the backside that was calling for the ball also, and we'll dive into that a little bit. To your point, though, Monday morning quarterbacking or whatever day this ends up being here, in that situation, I think it's easy to say, yeah, maybe you could have made like a little pass here and you would have had a wide open goal. But what if he doesn't, right? Yeah. Like, what if he passes this and, you know, I don't know how well he is known as being a great, you know, passer of the ball or across, you know, being able to cross the ball in the box like this. He's a goal scorer. That's what he's paid to do. I'm taking this shot, or I want Klaus taking this shot, I should say, you know, 10 times out of 10, I think, in this situation, regardless of what happened. It was an unfortunate result. We would have all liked to have had a goal there, not just for the result, but to continue to build on the confidence that he had from the penalty the night before, or the week before. But in this situation, it's just a disappointment. Klaus needs to finish this. Klaus needs to take the shot, I think. But it's got to find the back of the net after that great run that he had there in the 60th.
No, you're exactly right. That's a great point to bring up, that I feel like most likely in that situation, has he not taken that shot, or he does pass and then the next person, you know, doesn't finish the goal off, we're looking at Klaus going, why didn't you shoot that? You should be, this is a player that's not in confidence. So you're exactly right on that. Again, this is just easy, you know, Monday morning quarterbacking. But yeah, I mean, what a run he had. Chris Berman was going off with the rumbling, stumbling, tumbling. He could go all the way.
Yeah,
and then
there you go.
He blasts it over. And it was just such a tight angle. And where he would have had to put it would have been, you know, very precise. He did have a little bit near post, but it would have had to be, you know, upper 90. It would have had to be struck, you know, just right for that to go. But it's, again, one of those situations you look back on. And the other thing that I kind of picked up in that situation that we didn't really notice as much last year, but I've kind of picked up a little bit more, is last year, say Klaus takes that shot and it goes over, you felt like the teammates were kind of picking him up a little bit more, kind of like, you'll get the next one, it's all right, you know, that. And I'm seeing it a little bit more where we're seeing the arms down, we're seeing the arms thrown up in the air, like, why wasn't that played here, and this type of stuff. I think Indy was, or AZ was making a run kind of central in the box. I think we had Celio and Indy kind of pretty open, far post in the box, which, again, we don't know Klaus's angle, what Klaus saw. Maybe he did see that. It's tough when you're making a sprint like that down the line to really keep that pace, keep the ball at your feet, keep going, especially when you're seeing all the space, and also give glances off to your left.
And you also have a defender coming from that angle, too.
Right, and you're trying to, like you said, we're not known for Klaus really keeping that pace. I mean, he's given it all he has in the space he has. And so who knows what, even if he did see them, maybe he thought, I don't have the angle. But the frustrating part is you're starting to see it more in this team, and obviously you're going to get that with offensive struggle, is just kind of arms in the air, like I said, kind of, it's not as much, and this is just easy to say watching again, but it feels like there's situations throughout when that pass isn't made or the shot is over, rather than picking him up, it's kind of, you know, getting on him about what he did. And
yeah.
So, yeah, you really felt like this is it. This is where we, you know, settle it, and then maybe you back it down. Go up 2-0 and then, you know, settle into the game a little bit more. So to see that go over, you're just kind of like, oh.
Yep.
No.
Eric, we're 70 minutes into this game at this point, and we haven't mentioned Chicho Arango yet, but spoiler alert, he's going to be a big part of the next 10 or 15 minutes or so of this podcast. He got his first of more than two in the 70th minute, and this was ripped, man. It was an absolute pill. Berkey tried to lay out for it, might have got a fingertip on it, but unfortunately finds the back of the net. He had a lot of space here. And he took it and just absolutely blasted the shot. And all of a sudden now we're tied at one.
Yeah, and the frustrating part about that was, even just slightly before that in the 64th minute, you kind of had this controversy. And, you know, I'm not really going to say necessarily either way. It was a corner kick. There's jostling in the box. Totlin's marking Arango and kind of steps in his line away of the run that he's going to make, which all defenders do and everything. And there's, you know, bumping and shoving that always goes on. But what Arango does is, after he gets bumped, he actually turns and throws a closed fist, you know, punch, we'll say, in Totlin's chest. And, you know, that's one thing. But the biggest issue we had is shortly after that, Totlin's on the ground and Arango gets in his face, shoves him even a little bit, and solidified himself as a St. Louis boobird.
Yeah, he's going to have a fun time at City Park.
Yeah, and he's not hard to find out with that terrible haircut.
It's not. It's a bottom five haircut in the league, I think. One of the worst.
It's not one that I will ever be requesting at the barbershop, that's for sure. But so already you're frustrated because there was a VAR check. And, you know, it gets let go. And, again, I could see it going either way. My biggest issue is you do see slapping, you know, getting people's hands off you when, you know, they're trying to grab at you, slow you down and everything like that. But the issue I had was it was a closed fist.
Yeah.
So there was, you know, had they given it, I think there also would have been, you know, legitimacy to it. So then to have all that go down, and then shortly after that, you know, he's their striker. He's the guy that's going to get them goals. I just have an issue with, and it, you know, he took it well. He touched where he needed it and hit it you know, great. But my issue was, is why does he have that much space?
Yeah.
You know, and you look around, it seemed like there was like quite a few white shirts around him. Why is nobody on his back? Why is he not being contested on the shot? I know somebody came to like cut him down later, but I mean, he pretty much has time to turn and shoot. That shouldn't really be happening where he's at. Somebody I felt like should have been on him on his back. And so again, I mean, yeah, you can't really take anything away from the goal, but the frustrating part is everything that led up to that. And then to see him get it, it was just, even my wife was just like, he just looks like a guy that you would want to punch in the face. Yeah. Like, especially after that, like it was just of all people, like shortly after that, you're just like, God. And then like we touched on, we have nothing going. Here's our SL. They get this. And you just felt like, man, the tide's completely turned from yep. that moment.
I didn't see the Apple broadcast, the thing they put up that shows the win percentage during this point. I showed it later, and it obviously had swung way towards Salt Lake. But I'm curious as to what the percentage of percentage was of Salt Lake winning at this point when it was 1-1 versus St. Louis winning, because it just felt like they had all the momentum at this point and probably had outplayed City, you know, for the better part of this game, really since the third minute, you know, it seemed like outside of a couple of chances. So it would have been interesting to see. The only other shot that City had was shortly after this. Celio took one, and he had some space too. McMath made an easy save, but it just wasn't a lot on it. It wasn't like great, you know, great opportunity, I guess. It wasn't a great chance and a great finish, you know, there from Celio.
Yeah, I think we look more for Celio to be the provider as more less the finisher. And, you know, he's
got a little taste of it this year.
I know, and he gets himself in such great spots. It just seems like, you know, he's just been unlucky with a couple of his hits this year. And he was one, though, that was another frustrating part on the night was, you know, he's one of our most informed players, and it just didn't seem like we were giving him the ball enough or the chance to shine. And it's kind of been a struggle that we've had all year is, you know, while we feel like the strikers haven't been performing, at the same time, how many games do you feel like they go missing, not on their own fault? We just can't get them the ball. And so, yeah, to see him get that in there and then see that, you just kind of, and I do remember kind of the win probability, but it was still pretty much in our favor going into the second half. But man, once they scored, it changed.
It had to have dropped. Yeah. Probability was the word I was looking for there. I couldn't speak for a second there. I don't know what happened. But you're right. Win probability, that's exactly right. And the graphic is the word I was looking for,
yes,
too.
We're popping all frazzled, up. Man.
My goodness.
We're
I'm telling frazzled. Well, this is the second time we've done the same show in 2 days, Eric. I mean, my goodness, you'd think I'd be able to remember some of it. Moving on from that, though, it only got worse.
Yeah.
You know, and the 81st, man, is when it really went downhill. My least favorite rule in the sport, I think you might echo that, is this handball rule, one that nobody can seem to tell me whether or not it is actually a handball or not. To me, it doesn't look like one, and I'm not just saying that as a City homer. I think that I would have been really happy if this would have happened on the other you know, side there. Mm-hmm. But I don't believe it would have been a handball then either. Durkin is essentially trying to play the ball back. There's a ball kind of crossed in going through Parker's legs. I think it might have hit him on the undercarriage, as they said on the Apple broadcast.
Yeah.
And then Durkin's flying through the air with a knee elevated, kind of like Super Mario Brothers style, right?
He did look like
He did kind of look like Super Mario there. I thought that anyway.
Yeah.
Except his hand wasn't up, you know, yeah, in the air. It was kind of down by his side, and that's probably the that's probably what got him, because that ball comes off his knee and then like grazes the arm or something and then goes right back to Berkey. They rule it a handball on the field. You could see the supporter section there. Salt Lake react to it immediately. And then they go to review it, and you know, it stood. So frustrating. I need you to take your City hat off here, Eric, and play, you know, unbiased. Like, what are your thoughts on this?
So honestly, you just brought up a great point that I didn't really think of is, had that not been called directly on the field and it gone to VAR review,
there's no way.
I don't think this is given.
There's no way.
The broadcasters brought this up, and this is the frustrating thing that we've kind of had go against us a couple times, you know, both last year and this year when it comes to the handball rule, is what do you want Durkin to be doing? Like, where do you want him to, like, the rule should, you know, is, you know, if the hand is in an abnormal position and causes favor on, you know, the play. It comes off his thigh. His arms are up because, like you said, he's doing the Super Mario coming back. Like, it's not like he makes a swipe at the ball or any sort of movement towards it to where it causes that favor on the ball. It deflects off his thigh and unluckily goes straight up. And even where it hits him, I looked at it a couple times. Like, it's just slightly above the elbow, which I know is still considered a handball, but it's just still like, it just felt, City fan or not, I felt like if, you know, the rules were, you know, it was flipped, I would have still been like, my first initial reaction would have been, that's not, they're not going to give that.
It's one of these things where the penalty, no pun intended there, I mean, the penalty for doing this is so harsh. I mean, just one little mistake, and then all of a sudden, you've got a guy from, well, how far is the spot away? 10 yards, 12 yards or something?
Like, I should know this, but...
Not far, you know what I'm saying? No. And with one-on-one with the goalie, and the goalie's just helpless in that situation, just because this thing grazed the top of his elbow, like, it just seems so harsh for it, and that's the frustrating part of it. And you talk about abnormality in his arm and hand positioning. Mm-hmm. What are you? You're flying through the air. I mean, like, where does it go?
I don't understand what these refs are expecting. Or, you know, these guys can't run with their hands in their pockets the entire time.
Right.
And you even see it a lot of times now. The defenders, when they come up on a guy, you know, in a one-on-one situation out of the wing, first thing they do is throw the hands behind the back, and that's not a natural.
That's abnormal.
That's not a natural defending position,
right?
And the other thing too that I would maybe understand is, had the ball gotten through, somebody would have been wide open in the box. And I know I don't really remember exactly all the positions of all the players, but I didn't feel like he was clearly denying a goal scoring opportunity had it made its way through. And so I'm watching this replay over and over. The announcers are even saying, they're like, I know we're former players, but this shouldn't, like, they were almost adamant about it.
Right.
This should not be called. And to see it looked at that many times and just still to be given it, you felt so frustrated. And kind of like we said earlier, I truly feel like had that not been called in the moment on the field, after review, I don't think it's given. Hey, if you're a coffee lover like me, then you've got to try some of the best local coffee there is from Postal Coffee. Will over at Postal Coffee is super passionate about his roasting process, and it really shows in every bag. Every small batch is made to order from small visited sustainable farms, so you really get that great flavor and get that care in every order. Also, 20% of all profit goes to veteran suicide prevention. So not only are you getting a great tasting product, but you're supporting a great cause as well. And if you use the code SOUTHEND at checkout, you'll receive 15% off your entire first order. Nothing goes better to start your day than a new episode of SOUTHEND Supporters and a cup of Postal Coffee. So check them out on their Instagram at Postal Coffee Co. and check out their website at postalcoffeeco.com.
Yeah, and that's not the only situation in any sport, you know, because you have to have the clear and concise evidence. So, like, the call on the field is really important.
Yeah.
You know, to overturn something is much harder than to let something stand. And that's the way it is in football or baseball or you know, basketball or anything, that they're going to use VAR in or an instant replay. In this situation, like, I don't think the ball goes. It didn't hit him hard enough in the arm. I don't think the ball goes anywhere. I think it still plays back to Berkey, even if he just gets the knee on it or the thigh or whatever played it. And, you know, I can see, like, if he sticks his arm out, like, the ball takes a weird carom off his leg and he sticks his arm out. Like,
makes
that,
a movement sort of way.
But he's just in normal stride, and it happens so fast. Like, again, if you have your hands behind your back, that's abnormal. Like,
yeah.
If you're running, you're not running that way, you know, normally. You're running
God, you imagine if we signed somebody who ran like
right,
that.
Right,
exactly. Off the field.
Well, man. I mean, he's not going to get called on a handball.
He's not making that Klaus run, I can tell you that.
Right,
with his arms
right.
Down like
yeah,
that.
No, he's exactly right. So, like, to me, he's just kind of exploding up to, you know, to knee the ball back, and his arm is there. So really unfortunate, really frustrating. Chicho Arango comes up, and he's not going to miss. You know, it's just the way that it is. 2-1. Berkey, I think, kind of caught it. Like, he was like, okay, I think he's going to go right initially. Now I think he's going to go left, and he tried to stop his momentum. It was too late, and he did almost look like he kind of guessed right the second time, but, you know, you don't have enough time to react at that point. So it's 2-1. And you're down a little bit, but you feel pretty good because they throw 13 minutes up in stoppage time. I didn't go back and time this like I did the week before because I really didn't feel like there was that much downtime in it. I thought that, I know the new rules haven't been implemented just yet, but I didn't think there was a lot of wasted time. I didn't think there was a lot of injury time. They took some time out to review a couple of things, but that was it. 13 minutes, to be honest, I thought DC probably should have been more than 10. You know, I mean, 13 seemed high, and I'm pretty excited about this. Unfortunately, that excitement lasted until about the 91st minute.
Yeah,
because Chicho got his third of the night.
Yeah, I was with you. You know, it, kind of how City's been all year, and even though second half just looked terrible, and even Carnell touched on it a little bit post game, where he just said he felt like first half was, you know, we played all right, but second half there was no energy that came out, which is a worry. Kind of like, why aren't you coming out looking to, you know, finish off this game? What, why was the energy so low? But yeah, you're exactly right. Yeah, I mean, there was that weird collision with Blom and Yarrow and Berkey, which,
yeah, Berkey, man, landed right on Blom's stomach or something
that,
right?
Made all ribs, of us kind of hold our breath too, because initially Blom goes down holding his knee, and you're just, I was just staring in the replay on his knee like, please don't bend any sort of way. Yeah, especially with everything we got going on at the moment, you're thinking we can't go down another player. And so to see them all kind of get back up, you're like, okay, so I understand, like, you know, there was that time, the VAR checks. But yeah, seeing 13, I was even kind of like, you know, I was expecting a big number. But when I saw that, you're right. You feel like, all right, this is where we catch them. This is where, again, we've been playing off all night, but somehow you just feel like City's going to go, you know, do something with this and get a result out of nowhere, whether they deserve it or not. And then shortly after that, boy, talk about a quick high. I mean, it went down straight, and it was just, you know, it was frustrating seeing, it was just like a long ball. Arango, you know, ends up winning it, which is frustrating because you think, man, we got to like not allow him to do that. And it just falls, you know, to Luna with all this space. And then it's just like a 3-on-1 because it was just like a weird collision. Everybody's out of place and everything. And then, you know, he had options of, he could have shot, he could have passed it, and he goes to Arango for the hat trick, which made it even more frustrating just dealing with everything we dealt with, right, with him earlier, this guy getting a hat trick off that. But the other big thing that I kind of noticed with that was the vast difference in second half substitutions. I felt like RSL's made a big impact, and ours almost had the opposite effect. You know, like you touched on, we said going into the game, if Klaus starts, there's that excitement of Sam coming off the bench. You didn't really hear his name ever. We just couldn't find him the ball. And, you know, I felt like more times we were saying Klaus's name, it was because he was making defensive, you know,
weird, right?
Interceptions and stuff. So you see Sam come on, you feel a little bit of excitement, and then we're not getting him the ball. But their substitutions made a huge impact, and Luna was one of them, which also drives us nuts, because that little meatball just, oh, he just, there's another player that for some reason just irks me.
That is the oddest shaped soccer player I've ever seen. I don't know how tall that guy is, but he's got to be like 5'7", like 210 or something.
I think you might be giving him an inch or two, because it's what's even worse is, I mean, he plays right in front of us when he's at City Park out in that, and he looks even worse in person.
He does.
Like, the camera actually,
he's got kind of stupid hair too.
There's a lot that going on with him that just isn't the greatest. So, yeah, I mean, but unfortunately, he's a great player. But, it you know, you felt like he came in and just made a big impact as far as their offensive production. And to see it go like that, and really after the PK, it was just kind of this, like let down. But then after that, normally I'm, you know, intense sitting up on the chair, like, watching the games. And after that, I even kind of, like, sat back. It felt like that was for sure our nail in the coffin when that goal third minute, there should have been something that followed up after that for us that would have been their nail in the coffin.
Well, I told you I had the 3 TV set up, and I had City had the audio, and the Cardinals were on a different TV. And at that goal, I just switched them, and I turned the audio on the Cardinals game, and I just kind of had it on the background at that point. It was deflating. It felt like it was over. And, you know, you go from such a high at the beginning of it to the way the second half played out, really within the final 20 minutes of the game. You know, you can see the equalizer, and then goal, you know, after that. So super frustrating. You talk about subs, like having Diego Luna come in off the bench is pretty impactful. We talked last week and the week before, but Lubin continues to not be on the field, continues to be hurt. That's got to be, I think, probably the biggest outside of Berkey, maybe, probably, definitely, I would say, the biggest loss that you can have. And all the things that he can do in the middle to create opportunities, that's a big miss right now.
Yeah, it's showing more and more week in and week out, just as far as creativity, offensive production, and just especially holding down that midfield or just getting something going through the central, you know, end of the park. And so, you know, you do see, you see like Thorsen come on, and it just doesn't give you, or for me yet, that just like, you know, not that for, impact feel, you know. Yeah. One thing I did love, you know, and he always brings it, is, you know, when Alm comes on, he's the only one that I felt like when he comes on, he's going to give you that, whether you're down 4-1 or up 4-1. And I just wish I would have seen that from the other subs, because it just didn't feel that way. It almost felt like, you know, Carnell said they came out with no set energy in the second half, but it also felt like the subs coming on also shared in that lack of energy to, you know, get a result, it felt like.
Yeah, the energy, I think, could be helped, Eric, if they took a CrossFit workout or did something along those lines, potentially outside of what they've got going on at City Park, could potentially benefit from maybe what you're doing out there.
Luckily for them, I got the perfect spot for them to go check out. It's Ready to Live Wellness. As you said, they've got all sorts of things to get you moving and in the best shape you can be, from CrossFit classes, personal training, athletic performance. They have, and then after you're feeling your greatest, they'll make sure that you're still being the healthiest you can, whether it's chiropractors, physical therapists, masseuse, they have yoga, they have it all as far as getting you moving and feeling the best way you can. And whether you're a St. Louis City player or a newbie to just getting into the health field, they have you covered, and they ease you in, and they have great coaches and staff that'll make sure you're doing it properly, safely, and putting you in the positions to get the best results possible.
Check them out, Ready to Live Wellness, at 1530 South Kings Highway Boulevard in St. Louis, and follow them on Instagram at R2L Wellness. City drops one, as we mentioned, to Real Salt Lake, 3-1. They, as we said at the beginning, fall to 10th place in the West, have 7 points. Real Salt Lake jumps up to third with 10 points, showing you just how close this West is again this season. You turn your attention now to Saturday night at City Park, as City will welcome in FC Dallas, who is playing not very good soccer right now. Got a win in their first game. They sit in 12th place, because since that first win, they've dropped 4 in a row, losing 2-1 to cap off that 4-game losing streak at this point to Austin on Saturday night. Eric, what is to be expected at City Park this weekend?
I feel like we've maybe said this a couple times this year, unfortunately, but this one for sure, at home against a struggling team, this is a must win. This is, and not just a, I don't want to almost, I mean, obviously I'll take anything as far as a win goes, but I want this to be a dominant win. I want us to use this game as getting our swagger back. I want to hear that song played over and over again.
Shake your tail feather. Murphy Lee and Nelly.
I want to feel that, just like, dominance of a game. And the worry is, though, is you're going to have a team that's also going to be coming in thinking like, boy, if we can get a result here, it turns our season around, because City Park has become known as one of the toughest places, if not the toughest places in the MLS to get a result at. So they're going to be coming in with just as much hunger, but I feel like this is a must win. And what I'd almost like to see going into this game is just all guns a-blazing. And what I'd almost like to see is, whether it's Klaus or Sam up top, I think we keep the same formation. But who I'd like to see in that starting lineup as far as the midfield goes is, I'd like to see Celio, and possibly, if fit and can do it, I'd still like to see it either way, Alm out on the wings. And then, you know, AZ, he's still hit or miss as far as form. He did play a little bit better that Saturday night, but it's still lacking a little bit of productivity. I'd almost like to see Indy go into that, you know, attacking mid role. He's played there before, and he seems to be playing fairly well so far this year. And so, you know, you have that reasoning for rotation, because AZ's played quite a few games in a row now from the start. And like we touched on last year, you know, we kind of like seeing AZ sometimes come off the bench. It just feels like he almost plays a little bit more free, and he has that energy like we talked about, you know, Celio having last year. I just want to go guns a-blazing, and I feel like with those three in the midfield, especially because we're probably going to be going Durkin and Blom again, who are, like we touched on, more defensive-minded, I want there to be that kind of constant press with those three just running at you. Get Celio the ball on the wing and let him be creative. Let Alm use his speed down the wing and just run at these guys, or just pressing them into mistakes so well. And Indy is just that way as well. He is just constantly running, constantly pressing. And so I just would like to see us, you know, go at them and go at them with a ferocity throughout the entire game, not just for the first 5 minutes or first half. I want to see that throughout the entire game. The only other thing that I can think of as far as, because we want it so bad, because, you know, we see the potential in both of them, the way that we could see maybe Sam and Klaus work. And I this is just something I thought, think of, and it could be way out there, but I'd almost like to see us still run that 4-2-3-1, but in that attacking central mid role, I'd almost like to see Klaus there. Let Sam stay up top. Let him, just because you find Klaus, he's not really one. Maybe critique I have on Klaus that I've kind of picked up on this year is with his size and everything, he's not as much a hold up player that, you know, we would like to see him using his body, using his size, holding the ball up and allowing that gap that we've seen between the midfield and defense kind of, you know, close up to where maybe Durkin or Blom get the ball into Klaus checking back. He links up with either, you know, Alm, Celio, whoever's out on the wing, and then they find a sprinting Sam cutting through the defense, picking up the ball, and either Sam goes on towards goal like we've seen him do so much this year, or you have Klaus check back, receive the ball, link up with a midfielder, peel off, Sam makes that run, and then Klaus is in there for, you know, a tap-in goal in the central of the field. I don't think them running side by side in that 4-4-2 is going to work because they just don't seem to link up and they don't seem to find each other. But where you have this is you just keep Sam high, allow him to do those runs, and Klaus can use his creativity that he has with those quick link up passes. So I think if you're going to try and run those two together, I know you know, lack maybe the options coming off the bench, but then you throw Indy in there to shore up that midfield and sub Klaus out, or move Klaus up and sub Sam out, whichever way the game is seeming to go. But I just want to see this game be looked at by the team as a must win. And even Indy post game, he just looked defeated. He looked like, you know, they all understand, you know, how much they're kind of struggling at this moment. And I think this almost seems to be like a great scenario. I don't want to say a perfect, but a great scenario for us to get things turned around and really get that swagger back. You have a struggling team coming in. You're at home. Feed off that crowd. Get on top of them early, but stay on top of them. Don't look, and City fans aren't going to let you slow down the pace of play. We're going to demand more. Yeah. We're going to ask for more, and they just always seem to feel that way when they are at home. They just seem to look for that killer instinct. So Dallas coming in, they obviously have, you know, dangerous weapons, and they can be a team that can also turn their season around, but with everything the way it's going right now, I think this has to be looked at as a must-win game, but not just a must-win, but a dominant win.
That's well said, Eric. I don't have anything to add on that. I think you covered it all.
I don't think I could add it anymore because my throat got super dry just going off on that rant.
I see you're reaching for the tea or whatever you got going on there. But
sports drink, because tea is nasty.
Okay, I thought it might have been a flavored tea. It looks like a flavored tea to me.
It does look like it. I'll give you that.
Look, that's City Park tonight, Saturday night. As City, like you said, a must-win game. I would say I agree as well. You got to come away with 3 points here. And if you get 3 points, you're right back in the thick of things. It's a long season, of course, but my goodness, to go in here and get anything less than 3 points would have to be a huge disappointment.
Because the last thing you want to do, one thing that we did so well early on last season is you don't want to look at it as, oh, it's a long season, we can get, you know, bank these points as we go along. No, we need these points now to help set us up for later in the season. You look like a team like Inter Miami last season, which, you know, we hate bringing them up on the show all the time, but you look at how, you know, even after the Messi effect came in, you know, they turned it around, but it was just too late and they still missed the playoffs. Or, you know, you look at like Kansas City, and I know they went on a run and it worked out for them, but they were very close to, with their start that they had, not making it.
Yeah.
And so you would hate to look back on games like that we've seen so far this season where we had so many draws or just not great performances. And even if we catch on, look back and think, man, we dropped so many points and it ended up costing us later.
Then it turns in, every game becomes a must win at that point. If Kansas City doesn't have the stretch run that they had, they don't get in, right?
Right.
So No, that's 100% right. Again, Saturday night at City Park, look, big game against FC Dallas and a big Saturday sports day here in St. Louis. Eric, what do you have in the world of news?
So we got actually quite a bit of news here coming from this past week. City 2 got a win over the weekend, 2-1 over SKC2. McSorley and Klein got on the score sheet, which is exciting because, you know, they're players that we're kind of monitoring for, you know, developing and building for the future. And it's just great seeing, especially like John Klein, just staying in the form that he's in. He had a great end to the last season. Saw him feature a few times for City 1. So we've obviously, you know, somebody we'll keep an eye on. But then McSorley was, you know, a draft pick and somebody that we do see a future with. So it's exciting seeing them clicking and getting on the board. So that's just cool to see. As we kind of slightly touched on, while the refs are back, the regular refs, they ended the whole lockout and agreement and everything, the new rules, as far as the ones we're excited to see put into play, you know, the time substitutions, the on-field medical stuff, is still being delayed until April 20th. So while we do still have a couple games with the regular refs, as far as seeing those new rules be put into play, it's still going to be just a little bit before we actually see them. So April 20th, that weekends of game is when we'll see all that. Good, bad news. I don't know what this classifies under, but you know, a Norwegian side, Molde FK, which is a pretty big team over in Europe, actually put in an offer for Sam of $1 million, possibly plus, which City turned down. And it seems like City turned down a couple of their offers, which is great for a couple of reasons. A, it shows that they show Sam the importance that he means to the club and why we need him. And it's even clearer now that we can't let go of a striker, and especially at this moment. But another thing I like that kind of was the same with Nico, though, is they've turned down a couple offers. Like, they see the value, and they're not just going to be a team that, you know, is going to get pushed around and offload these players at the first, you know, big sign of money that's coming their way. So it's something, you know, that we're kind of getting used to as far as City players being scouted by other teams. I think, you know, Blom had a couple last year, AZ. So while it's great that, you know, we are getting known for developing good talent, we just hope that it kind of stays away. Nielsen is out. He, after last game, he suffered a broken rib. As far as the timetable goes for when he'll return, that's still kind of up in the air, but...
Well, I wouldn't expect him to announce that.
No, you're right. But yeah,
if history tells you anything.
No kidding. And so, yeah, I mean, just another, you know, injury setback that we have. You know, luckily Parker's back and Yarrow, and like we touched on, they played really well. So hopefully, you know, Nilsson is back soon. But in the meantime, they keep up with that form going for him. St. Louis's Academy had a great weekend.
Yeah, talk about it.
The U15s actually beat Man United's U15s in the MLS Next Generation's Adidas Cup, which was a little bit of a yay and conflicting story on me.
Eric, you have one crest tattooed on you. The other one you do not have tattooed on you just yet. So I understand it was conflicting, but
I was,
come on.
St. Louis all the way.
There you go.
St. Louis all the way. But just to be able to, you know, go up against you know, an academy that's nationally or worldwide known and get a result like that, it's huge for them. And just, again, continues to put, you know, St. Louis on the map. But not only the U15s got a big win, but the U17s got a big win and beating a big side Flamengo from Brazil 1-0 as well. So it's just great seeing that the academy is getting the recognition, as well as just, you know, continuing to perform, because that's exciting, because that's our future. You know, you talk about like homegrown player contracts and all that type of stuff. This is where that comes from. So seeing them doing well is just great. And I think the U15s, if I saw correctly, they got another big test. I think it's Arsenal coming up next. So it's just cool also just these kids getting to play against such big clubs, probably clubs that they've grown up watching. So it's just great for the St. Louis Academy and just St. Louis in general. Doing so well at all levels.
Well, I can say without certain, we won't be torn on the result that we won on that one. With a Kroenke-owned team, City hopefully comes in and dominates. Great news segment, Eric, by the way. A lot to cover.
Yeah, it's great seeing so much news.
You delivered, as always. Let's get into South End submissions. Quickly becoming one of my favorite segments.
I mean, it's for sure one of mine. And again, thank you for sending them in always. It's becoming one of my favorite parts of the show. So each week, if you have anything, please send them in, comments, questions, anything like that. We'll kick it off with our Facebook page. And Tommy Beck came in. In very short history of City, has there been a more impactful injury than what we are currently seeing with Leuven being out.
Yeah, and see, I answered this question a little bit ago, and I think that's my fault, Eric, because we've done this segment yesterday. So I knew that Tommy Beck had answered asked this question already, and it just kind of like one of those like Freudian slips there. No, I don't think there is an injury that you can see at this point that has been as problematic as not having Leuven on the field. The only other one I think I said that would even hold a candle to it would be if Berkey went down. That would be horrific. When Klaus went down last year, you had Nico come in. When Sam got loaned out, you know, Nico was there. People kind of stepped up when Blom was out. That was a big loss, too, in the defensive mid. But now you brought in Durkin, and they're kind of splitting time for the most part anyway. You know, the back line, there's a lot of defensive guys that can play multiple positions on that back line. It seems like there's not one difference maker to be able to deliver set pieces. How many times did we score on set pieces last year? And I know it's happened a lot this year as well, but he's a difference maker. He's a guy you feel like can get one outside the 18 and bend it around the wall and sneak it in far post, you know? And I don't know if we have that right now that you feel really comfortable with outside of Leuven. So for me, the chances that he creates and his ability to kind of put the ball where he wants for the most part, and his leadership out there as well, I don't think there's anybody that is as detrimental of a loss as Edward Leuven, at least as far as outfield players go.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the close second as far as that has happened for us would have been Klaus last year. But you brought up a great point there is, you know, we still were somewhat successful while he was out for such a long time. And even last year where we struggled, it was more so when Leuven was out during that time as well, more so than when solely Klaus was out. And we're truly seeing it this year. I mean, not only the creativity, but just getting the strikers involved with some of the balls he looks to play. Sam touched it on it on that one goal. Why he loves having Leuven on the field is he knows that he'll look for those runs that Sam's making. And so just his experience level, his creativity, his skill level, his danger on set pieces, everything that I think we're really just truly seeing play out in front of us right now is showing me that I don't think, as far as in the short history so far with the injuries that we have been dealt, it seems like Leuven for sure has been the big loss. So thanks for that one, Tommy. That's a great point and great one brought up. Somebody else on the socials named Sarah Heck. Do you know this girl?
Yeah, kind of. She's okay. Not, you know, Tommy Beck's a loyal listener. She's not a loyal listener.
Oh, no?
No, not a regular one anyway. Okay. She kind of comes and goes.
Yeah, so maybe. Well, we'll still read your question, Sarah. It is, where is the episode with your wives in South End Stand? The people want to meet them.
People want to meet South End Stand for sure. I agree with that. the wives, I don't know as much. Look, we tried to do it. We were going to do it at the end of the year. I do think it's a fun concept. It would involve probably lots of wine and, you know, different cocktails, maybe some South End slushies if South End Pam is pouring them. But it just hasn't happened yet. I think if we were going to do it, and we probably will.
We're going to do it.
We'll do it.
I'm looking forward to it.
We'll probably do. Yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be fun. We'll probably do it around the break, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. We've got a Leagues Cup that nobody in St. Louis seems to care about at all.
This is true.
So we'll probably do it around that time, if I would guess.
Yeah, and it'll be summer weather, so the South End slushies will.
Oh, they'll be there.
They'll make even more sense.
They'll be there. I need more ice in mine. I'm going to tell Pam that. They get a little bit watered down. I think we need more ice, a thicker slushie. We've got really big straws for them, so if we get bigger straw, more thick slushy, more ice added to it, more frozen, I think I would enjoy it more.
See, we don't know the ingredients because they won't share it with us, so we can't make any suggestions on how.
Yeah, there's a lot of rum in it, I promise you that.
Not enough. On Twitter, we have The Fickler, or at Shoe Dog. He says, why is our defense so leaky? I'm looking specifically at the left back and goals allowed in generally. Why doesn't Carnell address this issue with furious anger?
Eric, I'm going to let you take this one.
So, I do still agree that an area that I find that we're weakest at right now is that left back position. And one thing that's kind of worrying me that I'm seeing happen kind of frequently here with Markanic lately is he's getting exposed with speed down that wing. It just seems like he's getting outpaced. We definitely saw it with Paintsil against LA, but we saw it a couple times even with RSL. And the worry is other teams are going to notice that as well. And so say they maybe have a speedy player that can play on the left or right wing, you know, when they're playing City, they're going to throw him on that right wing and try and expose that. As far as the defense being leaky, the issue is it's the same things. It's not picking up these runners that are coming in or backdoor runs. I feel like again, you know, it's just, it's been stupid mistakes that have killed us. You know, that Nielsen where he came out too far and, you know, collided in with Durr, and then that leaves him in on Stroud on a clear break. It's just, we're beating ourselves on the defense. I feel like as far as defensive positioning and awareness and one-on-one defense, I feel like we've been pretty well. But the problem is you get exposed by the same things over and over. It really looks like we're, you know, just constantly struggling on the defense. The other issue is when you're just taking your foot off the pedal, you're getting barraged so much on the defense that you can only stop so much before eventually it gives way. So I agree with you there. To me, the issue, I mean, Durr, we haven't seen enough of, and, you know, seen him truly kind of come into his own as far as whether he will be, you know, successful there or not. But it is kind of a worry at this point. So hopefully, you know, the defense can stay strong as far as center backs go, and we get something clicking. I think Totlin's been great for us, one of our best signings. So I think, right, I agree with you, though. I think that left back position is still a little bit of a worry.
Eric, the only thing I heard there was Shoe Dog. I know you're a shoe guy. I'm a shoe guy as well. I don't know if this is a nod to it, but if it is, great. There's a documentary, not a documentary, a biography, I should say, called Shoe Dog by Phil Knight, who created Nike.
Oh.
If you haven't checked it out or listened to it or read it, I listened to it on Audible. It was really good, but it's all about like the history of Nike and like that guy's grind. Phil Knight's grind as he developed this company, you know, into like the running shoe, and then eventually, of course, the, you know, street sneaker that it became. But Shoe Dog by Phil Knight, it's a memoir of his whole life. Really, really good.
Oh,
I suggest it.
I will definitely check that out. The fact that this one's SCHU is probably not the same shoe dog we're
probably
towing,
not.
But either way, I'm going to check
maybe
that
out.
Maybe
it's a play
sure.
on words. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I'm going to check it out for sure. Our buddy Andy Cerrone, he came in with a comment. He also wishes us a happy Easter. So
my Cerrone.
Happy Easter to you as well. He said, can't wait to hear your honest evaluation. It was a tough night to be a St. Louis area fan.
And I hit on it at the beginning, man. It was brutal. And I don't know if Cerrone's an Illinois fan, but that game was pathetic, man. That was really tough to watch. The Battle Hawks losing was tough. I'm invested, man. I don't have season tickets for the Battle Hawks this year, but I had them last year and I had them pre-pandemic. I love St. Louis sports. I've told you this before. I would support St. Louis badminton if there was a professional club out there. It doesn't matter. You know, I love it. And I love football, and I love going back to the Dome because I was a Rams season ticket holder, my dad and I, when I was little. And so being a part of that, like my name is engraved on the Dome, by the way, on the Broadway side.
Oh, yeah?
Original PSL holders from 95 when they got here. So it's special. It's nostalgic. We tailgate. We go into the Dome. It's a crappy building. It always has been. But it's still like fun to watch, you know, and be a part of it. The Battle Hawks game, crazy. I don't know if you watched any of this or followed any of it, but they lost on a last second field goal.
Oh.
The kid that kicked it from the Michigan Panthers in the United Football League. It was a 64-yarder.
Anthony,
64. He makes it. Anthony Beck calls timeout. So he kind of iced him. Anthony Beck, the head coach of the Rams, former Jets tight end, head coach of the Battlehawks, I should say, not the Rams, calls timeout, ices him. The kick didn't count. He goes out and kicks the same one, 64 yards, and drills it again, back to back. The crazy story about this, and again, it sucks as a St. Louis fan watching this,
yeah,
but cool for the sport and cool for the league. He had not made or attempted a field goal, not even attempted a field goal since high school. He was on some college team out of Arkansas. I don't think it was like the University of Arkansas. I think it was like Central Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
And he just did some kickoffs and that, but never actually kicked a field goal. So this guy goes and makes not one, but two 64-yarders back-to-back like that to win a game. And the Detroit Lions reached out to him about potentially getting an invite to camp in the fall.
No way.
Cool story. Terrible result. The rest of it was also awful. It didn't get any better from there because City, you know, obviously laid an egg. Illinois was bad. The Cardinals won that night, which was exciting. But regular season baseball, you know, there's 162 of them. It is what it is.
They do have time to make up the
they
list.
Do. And I don't have like high expectations for that club either.
No.
Cerrone, that was a long-winded answer of saying it sucked and what I was going into with all this excitement, and then it ended up as dreary as it was a massive disappointment, and I hated myself for carrying three TVs down to my living room to have this setup.
Hopefully next time we have a joyous St. Louis day.
I hope so.
Dave Sperry, he came in with not a question but an observation. This team needs to learn how to keep possession. Not sure if it's because of the rotation or that we just need some different players. Hashtag frustrated.
Yeah, I'm frustrated as well, just like anybody else would be, Dave Sperry, and appreciate the question there. I don't know what you do. I mean, that's the thing. You know what I mean? Like, they've tried different options at different places, and I don't have an answer for it.
I don't think so. The issue, we're not a possession team, and we've made that clear. My issue is what we've been doing when we are in position, our possession. Way too many giveaways, way too many missed passes, way too many turnovers. I just feel like, especially in that offensive final third, I think, you know, while we want to catch them and we don't want to have much of the ball, the issue is what we are doing with it. And it's way too many turnovers. And so I think, as we touched on earlier with the question, is you're seeing that with Leuven. Leuven kind of helps control the ball and kind of helps be accurate with those passes. He's one of our most accurate passers that we have. And so seeing him out and seeing other players struggle kind of within that position, it's really showing as far as, you know, that possession goes. And so the other issue is when you don't have the possession and you're making all these defensive mistakes, it feels like the possession is a bigger factor than what it needs to be. Because again, we're not a possession team. So I think it just comes down to, you know, needing to do better with the position. As far as different players, I think we can't really make that judgment yet until we see, you know, healthy and with Leuven back in and running and seeing if that makes a difference. If we continue on the way we're going, we're full healthy, and that's when things aren't working. And the other thing too is, you know, you see it every week on the socials, everybody's saying, we got to go get a third DP. We got to go get this player. We got to go get that. Don't you think Lutz is out there looking?
He hasn't even thought of
it. It's not like he's like, you know, if we lose again, maybe I'll go,
right,
you know, make some calls. But I mean, he's out there looking, and it's, I just don't think it's as easy as people think. Finding that player that fits your system.
That's the key. It's a specific system.
Fits your system. You know, the other thing, a lot of people that I see notice, they shout out these names, but you're also looking at the names and it's like, well, that guy's in his upper 30s. Like, Don't you want to have somebody who will be around for a while or be productive or be able to handle the full length of season? So I think it's a little
bit... With the pressing style,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's a little tougher than people understand, and I do understand why the frustrations are growing, don't get me wrong, but I do think... On the other end of the line, it's being looked at the moment. It's just, we haven't just found that right player. But again, before we go jumping any ships on that, let's see how we perform when we get full health back and we're running. And if it's still a struggle, then that's something maybe you look to address. PintBSKY.social, or What the Pint on Twitter, said, when you see the accolades being given to Arango, who was player of the match day of the week, this week on Twitter, how far do you want to chuck your phone? A, 5 feet, B, 10 feet, or C, across the nearest effing river? And yeah, it's so frustrating, again, like we touched on, to see a player get away with something, you know, and then go on to, you know, do what he did throughout the rest of the night. It made it just that much worse. And again, the big thing that got me was, you know, when Tottenham was on the ground, getting in his face, pushing him, and right. And even like I said, my wife that night, just she hated that guy.
Of course.
Now she's a hairstylist, so maybe she was more upset about the hairdo. But at the same time,
it was a slap in the face to barbers everywhere.
And then just to see all throughout, socials and everything like that, seeing him getting praised, team of the match day and everything like that, just it made it that much worse.
Right.
And so... Yeah, definitely frustrating there. And then lastly, we missed one from last week. It was a little late, but our good friend Carmen Stone.
Love Carmen. Yes. Carmen's great.
If you don't know, she is over at Felix's Pizza Pub, which we got to go check out. And I'm still thinking about that pizza.
I mean, the pizza was great. The wings were really good too, man. Food was amazing. And they're just like so hospitable there. They take care of you, you know. We've got the bartender was amazing. They
big
do the great
city fans too. It's just
great place to watch a game at. The place was packed. They had the trivia night every Tuesday. Like, really, really cool place.
And she's just the coolest. But she put in there, and this is kind of pretty standard question I think going on right now, is why are fans, in quotations, so crabby on social media? I'm new.
It's great. You don't have to be new to ask that question. Yeah, Carmen. Yeah. I've been asking that for like, I don't know, a decade. Really, I think since the boomers got control of social media, it's been going downhill. You know, I've said it before, the fan pages, not city. I mean, it's not you know, unique to St. Louis City's fan page. It's every sports fan page in the world. It's like the toilet of the internet, man. It's just gross in there, man. It's not, it's just not a healthy place to spend your time, I don't think. And the majority of the people are fine. The majority of the people are great. The majority of the people aren't even posting. Mm-hmm. It's the loud ones, you know, kind of the vocal minority, so to speak, that look to get a rise out of people. And, yes. you know, as unfortunate as I think that is, the more unfortunate piece is when people give that person attention, you know, and they're posting something and now all of a sudden you're engaging with them, giving them exactly what they want. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and now you have this back and forth that's going to go absolutely nowhere. So you're going to always have fans complaining. And I think that's fine. It's when people say things that are just outrageous that kind of get people, you know, blood boiling and get under their skin. And then, of course, they respond. And now you've got this back and forth and it's just silly.
The other problem is the way the algorithms work and everything. Like you touched on, there are some people that do post good things in there or things that, you know, it's a good point or something like that. But it easily gets lost in the sauce because the more likes and comments, the higher up the algorithm, the more people see it. So, you know, there are people that are, you know, posting good in there that it just doesn't get seen. And kind of like you touched on there, majority of the people in those groups just aren't posting. I mean, I'm not a big social media guy.
Yeah, and me either.
You know, the few times that I look at it, those are the posts that popped up. I saw one guy, he posted a picture of Arango and just a smiling picture of him holding up the three and that said happy Monday. And you could tell what he's doing. And then you look at his profile and he's got like a Kansas City Royals shirt. Yeah. And then I was
he got picked on a lot.
I'm curious. And I'm like, all right, let me see what has this guy contributed and everything. And it's just every post that he's ever done is just like a troll.
I even
kind of joked with you because you put a reach out there as far as like looking for a parking pass in there and you were like, nobody responded. I was like, well, you should have put Stroud sucks before it and it would have got some attention.
It's Stroud's fault. I couldn't find a parking pass.
So I think, it's unfortunately, you know, there are people in there with good intentions that do try to make positive points and it just gets lost by the people that they know what they're doing. You can tell by the way they word stuff.
Like that on every single page. I guarantee that is not the only page that guy belongs to.
We had people from SKC's page commenting and we were like, what are they doing
still
in there?
Out there? And so just wait. They'll be back.
So I think it's just people know what'll get a rise and, you know, try and get attention, I guess. Yep. And it's weird. I think the more you're in it and the more, whether you're a soccer fan or just the more you're on the page, you can start to, you know, sift out the ones that are just looking for that attention or the ones that actually have good intentions behind it.
Could be a potential partnership in the works, by the way, with Felix's Pizza Pub, Eric, and so please stay tuned.
Something to keep an eye out on and where you can keep an eye out and send in your South End submissions, and please keep them coming. It's one of my favorite parts of the show and we're super grateful for all of them. But anywhere on any of our socials, on Instagram we're South End Supporters, our Twitter is SES_podcast_STL, and then make sure you're following us on Facebook for all exciting things coming up with South End Supporters.
Another episode in the books. Thank you so much, as always, to Ready to Live Wellness. Please remember to check them out at 1530 South Kings Highway Boulevard in St. Louis. Follow them on Instagram at R2L Wellness. Thank you so much for listening. As always, thank you for Eric Cole. This is David Heck. You've been listening to South End Supporters. We'll see you next week. And until then, let's go City.